City Talk 105.9.
City Talk 105.9, this is the home of great music and great conversation, and it's me, Will Batchelor, joining you for another week of Take Fives. I hope you enjoyed Take Five again last week. That was some of the best Take Fives from our archives to make up for the fact that I wasn't here. I'm back, I am live at the top of the tower, and I'm very pleased to say I'm joined in the studio by another willing volunteer who is putting himself into the unfortunate metaphorical situation that we put all of our Take Five guests. That is to say that your house is on fire, Ian Prowse from the band Amsterdam. How do you feel about that?
I'm not best pleased, really. I only live around the corner as well.
That's right.
Well,
you can probably go round and chuck a bucket of water over it during the ad break or something.
Somebody better warm me flatmate.
Exactly, yeah. Well, you should be out and about this time of day anyway. Shouldn't be in bed. Your house is on fire, but the good news is you got yourself out. You got all people out and all animals out as well. Okay. And you get to dash back in and save five records from the flames, as well as a number of other items as well. A film, a book, a photograph, and an object. I'm telling myself this as well, because I've been away for a week, so I have to okay. remind myself what's going on here. And we're going to go through those five records that you have chosen. But before we do that, Amsterdam, for those who don't know, give us the potted history of your band.
Oh, God, I think we've been going for about 10 years now. We've had quite a few different lineup changes. At the moment, we're kind of at our very strongest, because there's seven of us. It's a huge juggernaut of a sound. We've got flutes and fiddles and electric guitars and organs all sounding off against each other. And we're playing tomorrow night, actually, at the Working Class Music Festival, which has been organised by Alan Parry, and that's we're playing at the New Picket.
Yeah, that's in its sort of second or third year now, I think.
Yeah, but because they got the TUC conference down at the arena this year, they've kind of done it in tandem with that. And there's some other great artists on tomorrow night. There's an older English folk artist called Phil Hare, who's always been a massive inspiration on me. He's a brilliant songwriter and a great player. And we've got the trestles on as well, and it's going to be a great night.
You should be careful going to something called the Working Class Music Festival. You might get some, like, New Labour shock troops coming in and, like, busting it up and turning some tables over.
Well, it's quite funny, really, because people of affluence say, am I allowed to come?
Yeah.
Of course you're allowed. It's an inclusive thing, not an exclusive thing. So anybody can come.
Yeah, I'm sorry, my mum was a teacher. Is that okay?
No, that's fine. Yeah. It's not strictly proletariat, you know.
So if I turned up in a straw and a blazer, would I be okay?
No, you might get shot.
Okay, well, just try and blend in, but is tomorrow night. What time are you playing?
We're on about 9:30, and if anybody catches me in the walking around town today and tries to blag a guest list, it'll just cost them one pint.
Yeah, that's pretty good. That's pretty good value. So stop him. He'll be out in about an hour's time. Yeah. You can stop Ian Prowse.
I'll be near the Crown on Lime Street. You just buy me a bevy and you can get on the list.
Well, that's kind of in line with working class principles. It's quite equalitarian. slightly communist.
Yeah.
You know, basically equal but a little bit corrupt,
that's just about it, really, isn't it?
Do you consider yourself working class?
I do, actually, believe it or not. I mean, they keep trying to tell us that it doesn't exist anymore. But it certainly exists in my world.
Tell us about your background and your childhood and how you got into music.
I'm from across the river, which we can actually see from up here.
It's beautiful. I can see Snowdonia as well, actually.
Yes, we can see the Welsh hilltops there, and it's absolutely beautiful. I'm from the south bank of the River Mersey, where the river's at its widest, in a place called Ellesmere Port.
I've heard of that, yeah.
It's a rough old town. It was described in The Guardian, I think it was, as a working-class dog pit of a town.
That's not very nice.
Which isn't very nice, but, it's where I'm from. But I've lived over here in the city for about 3.5 years now, and which I absolutely love, and I'll never go back. But that's where I'm from, and it is. I'm off a council estate, and all the things that come with that, you know. It was kind of music that got me out of it as well, you know.
And you're a Tranmere fan as well, aren't you?
That's kind of my local club, and my dad supports them, so I'm no glory hunter.
But if you're going to go, if you're going to go all the way up to Tranmere, you might as well pay £1.20 and come through the tunnel, whatever it's gone up to recently. And
Tranmere need people like me at the moment, especially what we're going through with our new manager.
You weren't one of those ruffians shouting Barnes out, were you, on Saturday that I was hearing about on our news report?
No, I wasn't shouting. I don't really shout for managers out at any point in my, years of supporting them. But I do think he's coming to the end of the line. Because, I mean, if we fall through the trapdoor, we'll just be the next Chester City and we'll be in the conference before we know it. So something has to be done. It's a desperate situation.
Well, somehow we've gone into football already when I said I should really focus on music, at least initially. How did you get into music? And was it someone inspirational?
It was via football, actually. When I was about 15 and I played for the school team and I played for the town team as well. I was about 15, I'll never forget my dad saying to me at a family party, somebody said, "What's he like at playing, Tet?" My dad's name is Terry. And my dad said, "He's good, but he's not good enough to make it." And it came as like a shock to me. And so about 2 weeks later, I bought a guitar. That was it. That is a classic working class thing. If you can't make it as a footballer, you know the next thing to get out there is music.
That's pretty brutal. Were you angry or upset with your dad? Or
no, I wasn't angry with him, but I was shocked because I thought I was pretty good. But he was absolutely right, by the way. I didn't have the bottle really for it. And round about this time, I'd just been exposed to the music, which is still with me today, you know, and which drove me on. And I'll never forget the first gig I ever went to, and everything changed in an instant. I knew exactly what I wanted to do with my life, and that I'd never really veer from that path.
Well, we'll get on to the music that's influenced you as well, because you've picked five fantastic records that we're going to be playing over the course of the next hour, though. Before we do that, though, shall we have a little taste of what you do with Amsterdam? This is the song that moved the late, great John Peel to tears, and it is "Does This Train Stop in Merseyside?" That's Amsterdam and "Does This Train Stop on Merseyside?" And I have the lead singer himself in the building with me right now. He is Ian Prowse, proud son of Ellesmere Port, proud supporter of Tranmere Rovers. And of course, that song, it just contains loads of references to news events, of things that have happened to Merseyside, including there was a reference I heard in that to the Hillsborough tragedy and also to James Bulger.
Yeah.
And we were just chatting there, and they're things that you have to get right. If you're going to write about tragedies like that, you need to make sure that you hit the right note, so to
absolutely
speak.
Absolutely. I took, you know, a lot of time. Well, for the whole song, it took time to make sure it was all right and that it hit the right notes, because, you know, these things are so deeply important to people and to myself. And I've loved it over the years since the record came out. The amount of people who've said really kind things about it, that it's meant something to them. So.
And of course, one of those was John Peel. I mean, to have him say that the song moved him to tears. And am I right in thinking, did he say it was, I don't know, his third or his fourth favourite song or something like that?
Yeah. I asked Sheila, his wife, Sheila Ravenscroft, and she said she said everybody always goes on about teenage kicks, but "Does This Train Stop on Merseyside?" was the one that he always played at home. And even if he played at home, it wasn't even on air, she'd have to go over and give him a cuddle. And she told me this. She said he would always just get really tearful when he heard it. And when he played it on the radio, he'd have to play a song straight after it because he was always choked. And I spoke to him on the phone a couple of times just before he died, when we were going to meet up before he went off to Peru. And he used to just tell me about it. And it was, you know, you can't get any higher accolade than that.
Well, I was going to say, because although you've enjoyed chart success, you know, you've had a couple of singles in the top 40, you've not, I think it's fair to say, had, you know, huge booming commercial success.
No.
And yet to have an accolade like that from John Peel, same?
In a way, you know, I can't complain because I've got to do... Got to make records with Elvis Costello and like Christy Moore, who's like, you know, the most famous singer in Ireland, is even above U2 over in Ireland. He's done a beautiful cover version of that song. My friend Miles at the Wonder Stuff, he's done a cover version of it, and it feels as though it's not really mine anymore. You know what I mean? It's got its own life. And,
I'd like to hear Miles doing it. Is he doing a Brummie accent? Does this train stop on Merseyside?
Well, he kind of rewrote the words to include. Well, his brother rewrote the words to include
Wolverhampton
and stuff like that.
Does this train stop?
But it's great though. He does a great version of it.
Oh, I shall have to dig that one out. However, you've not chosen to save that song. I just played that because I like it and I wanted to. You've not been so. So arrogant, should I say, is to choose one of your own songs to rescue from the flames. You have chosen one from The Boss.
Yeah.
And tell us why you've gone for this one and what it is.
Well, if Liverpool is New York City and it has an alarming amount of similarities, then across the river where I'm from is profoundly industrial, is New Jersey.
Yeah.
So Ellesmere Port, in my tiny mind, is New Jersey, which makes me...
John Bon Jovi.
Bruce Springsteen. No, not John Bon Jovi. who is rubbish, let's be honest. But yeah, so that's my link. And Springsteen is, as anybody who knows me will tell you, he's my absolute hero.
Absolutely. I tell you what, I've heard a lot of claims before, but never that Ellesmere Port is the New Jersey of Britain. But I like it. I'm going to steal it as my own. I do this a lot. I take other people's ideas and I steal them. And that is
well, I've actually been there to New Jersey, and it is as dreadful as well. It's just, it's you know, mile upon mile of industrial estates and
presumably when you told them that you were from EP, they embraced you like a long lost brother and said, "Hey, that's the New Jersey of."
Well, I've got like Stanlow fumes flowing through my veins, so I felt really at home in New Jersey.
Absolutely, they can give you a nice giddy kick though, can't they? The old Stanlow fumes. I've sat outside that place often enough in my previous life as a news reporter. I came back a bit giddy from.
Well, when you brought up in Ellesmere Port, as I was, you were brought up with this myth or this legend that if the flame went out in Stanlow, that you had 10 minutes to make it to the Welsh Hills because the whole town, the whole of the northwest was going to blow up.
Yeah,
I don't know how true that is, but
don't light any ciggies on the way. Well,
no,
why, because it's burning off the excess, isn't it?
It's burnt into my psyche that if that flame ever goes, then we've all got to leg it.
Okay, well, I'm just looking out the window. It's still there now. It's still lit. Everything's okay, so you can enjoy this choice of Ian Prowse on Take 5. It is the man, the boss, from the Ellesmere Port of the USA. It's Bruce Springsteen and Born to Run. City Talk 105.9. 105.9, that's Bruce Springsteen and Born to Run, the boss from Ellesmere Port, more or less, or about New Jersey. But my guest for this hour on Take 5 is Ian Prowse from the band Amsterdam, and he certainly thinks that Bruce Springsteen, or New Jersey at least, is the Ellesmere Port of the USA. So who am I to argue? That's a fine tune to kick things off with, although we did slip one of yours in earlier as well. And we're going to get on to another one very shortly, going back a couple of decades before that to a Motown classic, Ian. Before we do that, though, you have to pick a film or a TV series to save from the flames as well. What have you gone for?
Oh, I picked a film, and the film is, it was called Local Hero.
Mm.
By Bill Forsyth, and it was, he just had a big hit around the world with Gregory's Girl.
Yeah.
And then he made this absolutely beautiful, whimsical, enchanting film called Local Hero, set up in a Scottish fishing village.
Yeah, it's about an American oil executive who,
that's right,
who goes to this fishing village with the intention of kind of buying it and bulldozing it, but then inevitably he kind of gets charmed by the village life.
And the irony being is the locals, they wanted the money.
Yeah, they're like, no, we don't like it here. It's got a young Peter Capaldi in it who's found great fame now, hasn't he, as in the thick of it, and the film version.
Well, Burt Lancaster's in it as well,
yeah.
Dennis Lawson. It's just one of those films, is as soon as it comes on, I get my nose starts fizzing and I start to feel slightly tearful, but because
right?
It's so lovely, you know.
You'll weep at Local Hero.
Oh, God, yeah, I'll cry at anything. I'm a consummate whinger.
Oh, we shall, trying to contain yourself now, even though you're thinking about it. The lead man, of course, the character in Local Hero is called Mac.
Yeah.
Mac McIntyre, which is also, it's almost like a script, this, isn't it?
He's Polish, but his parents changed their name to what they thought was an American name when they got off the boat.
Well, it's just about as American as anything else, isn't it?
It's American.
That's right, and so he didn't even feel that Scottish, but he's sent there by Burt Lancaster
because he thinks
it sounds Scottish.
Well,
there you go.
Polish,
I tell you what, if he's in America now, he'd be dumping the Scottish surname because not very pleased with the Scots.
No, they're not.
For different reasons. Well, maybe Jimmy Mack was Scottish as well, that Martha Reeves and Vandellas were singing
about.
Sounds
like it, doesn't it?
Yeah, he danced around in a tartan kilt. This is your next song, which is why I mention it, the 1967 hit. I'm going to throw in some pub trivia for you now.
Go on.
Feel free to repeat this. Did you know that Motown were going to release this in 1964 but didn't because of the connotations of the Vietnam War, and then it was released in 67 when Vietnam was still going on, but by then the public had become so anti-Vietnam that it didn't seem to matter to them as much that it could sound like an anti-war song.
Oh, fantastic.
You can use that.
I suppose it does sound like an anti-war. I'd never thought about it like that.
It's not an anti-war song in any way. It's about a lost love, and someone else is trying to pull her, and she's kind of going, well, maybe, but we'll see if Jimmy comes back first. But so it's nothing to do with it, but it could have been perceived.
I didn't think about any of that. I just It's just the sound of Motown music is one of those things that just gets to you.
It's probably a better reason to choose a song, to be honest. But, you know, you gave me the Ellesmere Port analogy, so I'm going to give you that one. Feel free to use it. It's off the internet, by the way, so it might not be true. I'll just put that disclaimer on it. But in the meantime, while we're thinking about it, let's play the song, shall we? It's Jimmy Mac by Martha Reeves on City Talk 105.9. City Talk 105.9, that's Martha Reeves and the Vandellas with her ode to the long-lost Scottish boyfriend, Jimmy Mac, there. And that was the second choice of my guest for this Take 5, who is Ian Prowse from the band Amsterdam, not the city. The city he's from is Ellesmere Port. Actually, is it a city or is it a town?
It's a town, a big town.
It's a big town. But anyway, you're from Ellesmere Port. You've come over the water to take us through your five songs, and we've got three more to come. Plus, we shall find out which photograph, which book, and which object you'll be saving from the flames as well. That is all to come on City Talk 105.9.
This is Take 5, City Talk 105.9.
Yes, indeed, she is right. You know, it is City Talk 105.9, and it is me, Will Batchelor, with Take 5. It's the show that takes place every weekday on City Talk between 2 and 3, and I'm always in the company of a different guest who takes us through the five records they would save from their burning house. And the person putting himself into that unfortunate situation today is Ian Prowse from the band Amsterdam. He's already chosen Born to Run by Bruce Springsteen and Jimmy Mac by Martha and the Vandellas. We've got three more to come, plus you get to save a few other bits and pieces as well, Ian, including a photograph. And the photograph you've chosen is a bit different to what most guests choose. They go for a family snapshot or something like that.
Right.
But you have gone for something quite interesting, and I've discovered while we've been chatting that it's because you're a history geek like me. So tell us what you've gone for.
I've gone for the most iconic photograph of the Second World War, which is the Soviet soldier on top of the Reichstag planting the hammer and sickle.
And the Reichstag is the parliament building in Berlin.
It's the parliament building. So on the back of like 26 million people, Russian people dying in the Second World War. Mm. It's incredibly symbolic moment for the Russians and for the world as a whole. And it's a really famous photograph of the soldier planting the flag all over Berlin, you know, to say we've taken the city and the Nazi regime is over. It's also interesting, historically speaking, because if you do a degree in history, they teach you how to analyse photographs or any source. Mm. And this particular photograph is actually, it portrays to have been taken as the city's being taken over, but it's actually not. It was a few days later.
Yeah.
So, and also it's been photoshopped, because in the original photograph, the officer who's holding up the guy who's putting the flag in, his arms are covered in wristwatches.
Is that right? Because he's been looting.
He's been looting. Yeah. And obviously, you know, for the communist
message.
Propaganda,
yeah.
for the working country to have taken over Nazi Germany, you don't want everybody thinking they've just been looting as well, you know?
Well, that's right, because although, as you say, I mean, Russia suffered deeply in the Second World War, and it was good that the Nazi regime was brought to its knees. That particular period for Berliners, many of whom were innocent, was a particularly dark time, because the Russians basically sort of they marauded through the place.
They did, yeah.
Raping and pillaging for, I think they had 3 days where the officers just said, do what you want, and it was a terrible time for them. So despite it being a triumphalist picture...
Well, it was a complete breakdown of everything. Society, you know, human behaviour and everything, you know, which... The psychological impact of losing 27 million people in the nation is... They probably still haven't recovered from it today.
It's enormous, absolutely. And as I mentioned, you are a history geek, and I am too. I did it at uni, and you have just done a history degree. Now, this to me isn't very rock and roll. Aren't you meant to, like, spend your spare time throwing tellies out of windows and parking Rolls Royces in swimming pools?
Well, funnily enough, out of all of my friends who are also singers and songwriters in bands who I know, I'm the only one out of the lot of us who's ever actually thrown a television out of a window.
Have you?
Yes, Glasgow, 1992, Trust House 40.
Did you pay for it?
No, I didn't.
You will now. They're going to give you a bill.
somebody else got arrested for it, but that's another story. So I've done the rock and roll thing. So
you've done the rock and roll.
I think it's incredibly rock and roll to study your own history and other people's.
It is fantastic, and you've just done it. So did you do it part time or more or less
full time? Yeah, I just did it in my spare time. For the last 6 months of the degree, I spent all of my time in the library studying it, because I really wanted to get a good mark, because I really took to it, you know.
When I was a student, I was a student at what you might call a normal age, like sort of 18, 19.
Yeah.
Some of the older, mature students, as they were called.
Yeah.
Some were great and some were a bit weird, and you never quite understood them, and there was always a strange dynamic between the two.
Right.
But you must be quite cool, if I can put it that way, because you're a rock star. You're a published rock star, and you're turning up at history lectures.
No, it was lovely, actually, because all the lecturers and all of my fellow students, they all come to all the gigs now.
Yeah.
So that's and the two worlds have kind of intermeshed as well, and it's been really nice. I mean, a song like Does This Train Stop on Merseyside is a historical song.
Mm.
So, and this next record that we're going to start making in the next couple of months, some of what I've learned in doing this history degree will inevitably seep into the music. You know, if you study something like the Holocaust, you cannot help but to be, you know, deeply affected by it. And you learn things which ordinarily you wouldn't. Like, for example, Hugo Boss.
The clothing.
They designed the Gestapo's uniforms.
Did they really?
IBM installed rudimentary computers into Auschwitz. Things that you wouldn't know, but it's still, these are the facts about what happened, you know.
A lot of people don't know as well that Volkswagen, the Volkswagen Beetle, was the brainchild of Hitler, wasn't
it?
And
the Autobahns.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's unbelievable, absolutely unbelievable.
Do you know, it's funny, actually. I don't know if you've been to an airport in Italy recently. I'm trying to remember which one it was. I'm sounding incredibly well-travelled there, but I'm not. It was just, I think it was Milan Airport I went to a couple of years ago, and the security staff there looked like, to be fair, they looked like they were in the Gestapo. They had these incredibly sharp uniforms on, very, very well fitted. And
they're Italian, aren't they?
The peaked caps that went down right over the eyes and stuff. And I found out later that those were designed by a famous brand name. It was probably, you know, Versace or someone like that, a big Italian design house.
Well,
that makes sense.
During the World Cup, Italy always has the best kits.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean?
They're very stylish, even if they sometimes make stylish outfits for the wrong people. Very interesting, and you're very welcome to save that particular one from the flames. It's the Russian flag being hoisted up on the Reichstag. And another bit of history now as well, musical history, London Calling by The Clash.
Yeah, The Clash, for me, are simply the greatest rock and roll band of all time. And there's a great tagline that goes along anytime anybody talks about The Clash. You see people wearing T-shirts. It says, The Clash, the only band that matters. And Joe Strummer is just such a hero and inspiration to me. I was talking about it last night. I was out with a friend of mine. We were talking about kind of singers who are not like great singers or sort of non-singers, but it's like Sean Ryder or Dylan. And Joe's like, to me, he's the greatest soul singer of all time, but it's kind of, some people might say he can't sing, but to me it's
doesn't matter.
It sounds like, you know, straight from the soul.
It's I think it's social commentary as well, because I mean obviously the lyrics are social, but I was only 3 in 1979 when this was released, but even I kind of feel as soon as you hear those opening notes, well, it kind of takes you back to a gritty concrete jungle kind of urban setting.
It's the most cataclysmic beginning to a record as well ever, when those chords just bang in. It's just, you know, it never fails to get me.
Well, you'll be glad to know I'm not going to speak over it in that case.
Good.
This is City Talk 105.9. It's The Clash. It's the third choice of Ian Prowse from Amsterdam, and it is London Calling. City Talk 105.9, that's London Calling by The Clash. What a tune, taking us all back to 1979, even if we don't remember it properly in the first place. And you're right, Ian Prowse, who chose that song. Joe Strummer can't sing. He'd probably get sent off the stage, wouldn't he, by Simon Cowell now if he turned up at the X Factor.
I don't even want to talk about that sort of thing.
I suspect if Joe Strummer did turn up the X Factor, it would be to lock the doors and burn it down or something like that.
Yeah.
But there we go. That is the third song. We've still got two more to come, including one from, well, kind of the same period and from a band that often get lumped in the same bracket as The Clash, and for good reasons as well. Before we do that, though, we have to choose a book that you're going to save from the flames as well. And you have gone for?
Wuthering Heights.
By Kate Bush.
No.
By Emily Bronte, Ellis Bell, as she was.
Yes, she was. Ellis Bell was a
pseudonym.
Working name.
For those who don't know, a lot of people, actually, I say Kate Bush is a joke, but more, I would suggest that equal numbers of people are familiar with the idea of Wuthering Heights through Kate Bush's music than through the actual
through that,
book itself. So what's the book about?
Well, I mean, that song is a beautiful evocation of what the book is about.
Mm.
The book, when there was the TV program on, wasn't it, the other week, they did another, they've done loads of films of Wuthering Heights and lots of TV shows, and every single one of them has gotten it wrong.
Is that right?
Completely wrong. Because, for example, they were Heathcliff and Kathy were kissing in the other one. That sort of thing didn't go on. It wasn't about that.
Mm.
The book is essentially about the moors, really, and the changeable weather, as you know, as a
Wuthering is a Yorkshire term for changeable weather, isn't it?
Yeah, of course. And And the Moors are is Cathy and Heathcliff, and that's what it's about. And like in the TV program the other day, they had her buried in a churchyard, and she's buried on the moors next to Heathcliff, which is the whole point of the thing. Is you know, the wildness of their emotions, which are completely untethered. Which is what the book is about. It's completely emotionally led. There is no reason in it, and the two principal characters just completely follow their emotions all of the time, and that's what makes it so destructive.
It's one of those books, you know. I think I'm gonna have to go back and read it, because I think I was forced to read it, you know, for A level English when I was 17 or something. And we spoke earlier about how perhaps young people aren't the best people to appreciate education, and maybe when you get
wasted
some more
on
our age,
education.
You get to enjoy it some more. So maybe I'll go back and read it. One thing I didn't realise, though, I was just doing some little last minute revision before this show, and I typed it into Wikipedia, as I tend to do, and I've noticed that Heathcliff, who was quite broody, and moody, was actually a Scouser.
He was a Scouser.
In some ways. He was a foundling.
Well, he was probably Irish.
Yeah.
He was probably
or
a foundling.
From America.
Most people coming through from Ireland, they came to Liverpool first, and either stopped or went off to the New World. And Heathcliff was just wandering the streets when he was found and taken back to Yorkshire, to the Heights. He was a Scouser, I suppose.
Heathcliff was a Scouser. There you go. You can throw that one out as pub knowledge as well. You see, you learn something on this show, which, by the way, is called Take 5 on City Talk 105.9. Your next song, again, it's almost like we scripted this, is Kate Bush. It's not
Kate.
Wuthering Heights.
It's not. It's probably my favourite Kate Bush song. Kate goes to a place which no other artist ever goes to, and she touches me in a way that I simply don't have the words to describe what it is she does with music. And this particular song is so beautiful, it's unbelievable.
And the song is This Woman's Work.
This Woman's Work.
Why did you choose this one above, say, Wuthering Heights or one of the more better-known ones?
Well, let's just listen to it, and you'll feel its magic.
Ooh, that's a challenge. So let's listen to it now and see if we get touched by the magic as well. It's the fourth choice of Ian Prowse on today's Take 5, and it is Kate Bush, This Woman's Work. Kate Bush and This Woman's Work on City Talk 105.9, a beautiful song, and Ian Prowse is going to dry his eyes during the break, and we're back in a couple of minutes with his final choice.
This is Take 5, City Talk 105.9.
Yes, indeed, City Talk 105.9 is the station. It's the home of great music and great conversation, courtesy this hour of my studio guest, who is Ian Prowse from the band Amsterdam, proud son of Ellesmere Port, now living in the city of Liverpool and threatening never to leave.
No,
a historian, never. A musician, a failed footballer,
and a
successful musician, which is good. We're going to save one more object and one more record from you before we wrap up, Ian, and afterwards, of course, City Talk will continue pumping out entertainment in the form of Peter Mack, who is with you from Drive, 4 hours from 3 until 7. And don't forget, as ever, the last hour of that show from 6 till 7 will be City Talks Football. So if you want to have a chat with Macca about any of the footballing results over the weekend, whether it's red, blue, or indeed white, as Ian would not like me to miss out, then get yourself onto the phone and call Macca between 6 and 7 for City Talks Football. However, before we do that, I need to find out which object you're going to save from the flames, Ian.
It's going to have to be my laptop, isn't it?
Yeah. I'm going to have to start banning laptops, actually, because I say you have to choose everything really carefully, but you can put everything on a laptop. You can put as much music, as much photographs, as much literature as you want.
You can read everything on it. I'm an only child.
I thought you seemed spoiled.
No, I wasn't spoiled. but I didn't like being an only child. I hated being alone all the time. I really did. But if I'd have had a laptop back then, I'd have been fine.
Yeah.
But as it happened, those imaginary friends who are still around to this day, I wouldn't have needed them.
My laptop
would have sufficed.
It's really interesting you say that, because I was on holiday last week and I was in a very rural, very quiet part of Norfolk, which is a place we used to get dragged to when I was a kid, and I hated it as a kid. I love it as an adult, but I hated it as a teenager. There's nothing to do. There's no arcades. There was nothing to see. It was just dull. And I said to my wife, you know, I'm not going to inflict this on my son when he's 10 or 12. I'll wait till he enjoys it. And she said, quite rightly, that nowadays, if your kid has a laptop and a phone, you know, they can still do a lot of the stuff they were doing at home. They can chat to their mates. They can Skype their mates.
Absolutely.
They can do everything.
I would have loved a laptop when I was little. Just sat round trying to think of things to entertain myself while my parents were in the pub. it would have done everything for me. And I would have, you know... been much happier.
Even a rainy seaside, British seaside holiday couldn't destroy it.
If you've got a laptop, you can go and do anything. You know, it opens up the entire world. You can talk to the whole world, or you can read anything, or you can watch anything, musical, anything. So the laptop will be saved from
this. It's a magic lantern. Do you fall into an Apple camp? Are you a Mac man, or are you a PC man?
It's just an ordinary one. It's not a Mac thing, whatever that is.
A lot of musicians...
I'm not very savvy with whatever they
are. Macs are, you know, Apples, Apple Macs, they're the kind of stylish ones that come in different colours and apparently are better, but, you know, it's a lot of musicians go for them and get quite, you know, aerated about them. So I thought you might be one of those.
No, I'm not one of those.
You haven't. You failed the pose test, but possibly passed the reality test, which is good because anyone will be allowed into your festival tomorrow. Just remind us again, the Working Class Music Festival.
Yeah, we're doing the Working Class Music Festival tomorrow night. It's been a really well-organised thing by Alan Parry. There's five bands on. I think it starts at 8. We're on about 9:30.
So it's one night only at the picket?
They're having four nights. Oh, the whole festival goes over three or four nights. And we're doing tomorrow. They've got Chumbawamba on as well. And I think there's a Clash tribute band on tonight. So, and it's a great thing, you know. And we're playing as our big seven-piece sound tomorrow night. So that's going to be lots of fun.
Fantastic. And if you do see Chumbawamba, do us a favour. Go up to them and say, do you want a vodka drink? Do you want a whiskey drink? Do you want a lager drink? I bet they've never heard that one before. Yeah, absolutely.
But also, next Sunday, if anybody's around in the city, there's this great thing that takes place every year, and it's called the Hope Street Feast. And they close off Hope Street, set up lots of stalls, and there's lots of music and magical things for the kids. And I'll be getting up and playing with some of my friends. Ian McNabb from the Icicle Works is going to play with me. Jennifer John, hopefully, is going to come and sing with me, and some other people. So
both of them, two of my previous Take Five guests.
Really?
It's like one big happy family around here. So that's on Sunday.
That's on Sunday.
Don't drive because they ban cars, don't they?
Yeah. Well, I do it every year, and it's a really lovely day. And just have a drink in the street and come listen to some music and chill out. Yeah.
Fantastic. Opportunities galore to see Ian Prowse in Amsterdam. And of course, if you just want to see him without his guitar, then just turn up at a library. He'll be reading a history book in the corner because he's a self-professed history geek. Ian, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you for joining us on Take 5 today.
No problem.
And get yourself down to the picket if you want to see Ian in Amsterdam tomorrow, or indeed Hope Street on Sunday. Coming up next on City Talk 105.9, I mentioned him a few minutes ago, it's Peter Mac with Drive Time. That's coming up after the final song, which is Going Underground by The Jam. Words needed for this one, Ian?
First band I ever saw was The Jam at Liverpool Empire. They came on stage, they did a song called All Mod Cons, and after just two bars, I just went, that's what I want to do. So I wouldn't be here if it wasn't for Paul Weller. So I've chosen one of his older, better songs.
You should put that on a T-shirt as well. I wouldn't be here if it wasn't for Paul Weller. Yeah. I like that. We should get that on a T-shirt and sell it. That's copyright us, City Talk 105.9. Enjoy this. It's the final choice of Ian Prowse.